Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikin.
And welcome to the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. We're here each Saturday morning to talk to you, chat with you, answer your questions, and hopefully bring you some interesting information that may be helpful to you in the area of estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid asset protection planning, wills, trusts, powers of attorney, health care proxies, gift giving, taxes, stuff like that. So if you have a question, something you've been thinking about, working about, you can reach David and I here for the next hour here in the studio at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Morning, David.
Morning, Harry.
Beautiful day out there today, huh?
It's hot already.
Oh.
Super hot.
It is hot. Well, we're in the midst of heat wave, right?
It's summertime. It does usually happen.
It's not just, it's not a normal summertime.
It is summertime.
My brown lawn wants a word with you.
Oh, my goodness. They're brown all over, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. we don't have water restrictions yet, do we?
I don't think so.
No.
Okay. No. It's fine.
California, yeah.
I feel like Saratoga's getting lots of storms that we're not getting in the late afternoon.
North and South Kingston got pummeled last week. Like trees. I mean, really, no power. I had a phone conference call at 9 o'clock, I think it was must have been Wednesday, Thursday morning. The client didn't call in. Finally, she called in around noon. She said, sorry. She said, I didn't have any power, all night.
So did you just go next door to Dysing's? Have a very long breakfast?
They have the most incredible.
I've stayed away. Yep. It's part of my diet. Basically, all I got to do is stay away from Dysing's.
They make an apple strudel down there. It'll knock your socks off.
So good. Hey, our little theme song.
Yes.
When I'm 64.
Mm-hmm.
Great song. Are you behind that?
I am the one who introduced that. Many years ago, we did a show, at a station down in Kingston as well. When I opened the Kingston office in 1998, I used to drive down to Kingston every Saturday morning to do a radio show down there. And at some point, I was talking to the studio down there, and we, I thought, wow, of course, this was 20 years ago,
It was 24 years ago.
I wasn't even 64 then.
You weren't even close.
Now I haven't seen 64 in a while. But yeah, it was kind of a clever song. The interesting thing, when the Beatles wrote that song, back in the 60s or whenever it was, the average life expectancy in England was 64 years of age.
Wow.
And of course, it's keeps increasing. I mean, other than when the pandemic, it dropped a little bit during the pandemic, but it's back up around, I don't know what, men are, 78, women are about 82, something like that.
Yeah. Grandchildren on your knees. Do you remember the names of the grandchildren, gentlemen?
Vera, Chuck, and Dave.
Oh, very good.
Wow.
You were
ding,
one
ding,
of them.
Ding.
Look at
you. Were one of them.
It's a great
I'm
song.
A Beatles, I mean, I grew up with the Beatles, that was,
Sure.
19...
So next year is 25 years of Kingston, Herzog Law Firm's footprint in Kingston.
It will be 1998, yes. It will be...
We should celebrate
2023.
That.
2023, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ben, what are you doing in 2023? You want to celebrate?
I'll celebrate, absolutely. Okay. We can start right now and just work right through till next year.
Ben doesn't really need an occasion to celebrate.
I do not, no. I just need the word that we're doing it and I'm ready to go. So, yeah, that would be fine.
Cool.
That would be fine.
So, Harry, a lot of, there's ebbs and flows to the workflow, and sometimes there's lots of guardianship clients, or sometimes there's lots of young clients coming through the door. We've had a large amount recently, last 3-4 weeks, of Medicaid situations. So not planning, not doing the trusts ahead of time, but like, hey, my dad's in rehab and he can't go home, or we're not sure if he can go home.
Right.
I know you've had a couple of them as well. Would you care to get into any of the... I got one in particular that's going to really rile you up, and I don't want to do that just yet.
Give me 15 or 20 minutes
to
get in the groove here.
Well, I'll tell you one off the bat that won't rile you up. It's more of the normal fact pattern, but what is fantastic about it is how the exemptions and the little quirks in the law, and fortunately our knowledge of it, really helps the client, because the client came in, you've heard this before, I just don't want to lose everything.
Yes.
Right. And thankfully we have a child who's been living with mom for the last 10 years, and unbeknownst to them, they're the most important person in the room now, because they're a child caretaker for the last 2 years. And so the house is protected. And then we say, okay, have we prepaid funeral? No, not yet. Okay, well, let's do that. You want to prepay for your children? You could do that too. I mean, it's not on everyone's, you know, wish list, but it's possible.
It's a way to use money without spending it down on the nursing home.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a benefit to the family.
Yeah. And so a couple of them where it's really important that they're still married. They have a spouse. The spousal exemptions really could save the day. And depending on the county, sometimes we can move money around with no recourse or no likely recourse from the county. So, it's we say it all the time. You are not too resourced to qualify until we kind of tell you you are, because you never know.
I think people come in. I think the most common Medicaid planning mistake people make is they go in, it's too late. I can't do anything now because my dad's in the nursing home. And I say, no.
Never too late.
It's never too late. It might have been better if you'd started. I think what I'm seeing, the Medicaids I've seen come in the last couple of months, for the most part, are people who have done no planning. And so we wound up doing what we call, you know, a reverse rule of halves spend down, which is a nice way, is a complicated way.
Did you write that down?
Huh?
A reverse? You wrote that down the whole thing?
Yeah, sure. Reverse whatever you said.
Okay.
As opposed to an
option. Do I need to use it now, or am I just supposed to tuck it away for later?
Tuck it away for later.
Okay, that's fine.
If one of us doesn't show up one day, just say that.
I'm good with that. You know, I can sit in and hold my own for a little bit.
I think you can.
Just a little bit, you know. I would agree with that, because, you know, folks that don't think that they can be helped, at least you can help them by half, depending on what the situation is.
Usually that's the absolute worst case.
So right. That would be the worst case scenario, right?
Half.
So they come in, they got about, let's say they got about $200,000. This particular person lived in an apartment, so there was no real estate involved. Well, they're sitting on around $200,000 of life savings, okay? Already in the nursing home, this person also was not a candidate for rehabilitation. So Medicare isn't picking up any of the cost. If you are discharged from a hospital following a three-day stay, three midnights, you could qualify for rehabilitation, and Medicare will pick up the first 20 days of your coverage in full and potentially 80 additional days for a total of 100. I mean, people go, they say, I only have 20 days. So, it's possible you could get more than 20 days.
Well, some people, Harry, come in and they say, well, we know we have 100 days, and they don't realize how those last 80 days work.
Yeah, because you might only get 26 days.
Yeah.
In fact, most people aren't going to get
100
days.
So days 1 through 20, Medicare can cover 100% of the rehab.
They pay 100%. I think at beginning on the 21st day, there's a copayment of around, what, 185?
Yeah, 180.
It's just under $200 a day.
So think about that, guys. 30 days in a month, let's say it's 180. Right, we're talking about $5,500, $5,600 a month that you're still responsible for.
Yeah.
So people come and they say, no, we got the 100 days. We know we have. They don't realize that last 2 months of the 100 days might
they
be
may have to
an $11,000 to-do.
Right. Now, it's possible some people have supplemental insurance, which picks that up, but a lot of people don't. And the other thing, sometimes the supplemental insurance company picks up some of it, but they don't pick up all of it. Okay. So anyway, my guy didn't have that advantage. So he's sitting there, you know, looking at about, you know, $180,000, $200,000. So, of course, the nursing home said, oh, well, yeah, we can help you. That'll pay for about a year, you know. And then they said, blah, 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 blah. They have somebody who'll do the Medicaid application. So this particular
person. In a year.
Right, in a year. So this particular person who's in the nursing home, one of his relatives is a client of mine. So the relative comes in to talk to me, and I said, guess what? Instead of waiting a year, 11 or 12 months,
and going through 100 and whatever,
we're going to do some transfers. We're going to do an application. And guess what? We can save about probably about 90 grand.
Yeah.
Of that $180,000. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And guess who didn't tell them that either?
Of course not.
The nursing home.
The nursing home. They don't tell you this stuff.
Well, they don't. I guess they don't have a duty to tell you, but that's still. They're not going to tell you the ways to have them have Medicaid pay the bill
earlier. That's not their job. I mean, I'm not suggesting they're doing anything untoward. I am suggesting that, you know, they don't always recommend that. Well, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, so I wasn't planning on riling you up so early. You said 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, but I got to do it now because you mentioned Medicare and you mentioned nursing homes.
Right.
And so the fact pattern that, unfortunately, I don't think there's anything we're going to be able to, our firm will do, but the client's certainly going to try to do something. So we have a rehab situation, and maybe they just didn't read what was in the mail, or they weren't sent something, or they weren't notified appropriately. But back in February, their loved one was told that you're no longer covered by Medicare. So for the audience, right, you don't just get 20 days. You can get up to 20 days. What can stop the 20 days? Well, you refuse the rehab, or you've already plateaued in your recovery, because rehab is to get better. So you could stop getting better day two, day 92. We don't know. So Medicare cuts out. We've been contacted, and we know that there's about $50,000, $60,000 of gifting that's taken place, and we're going to need to undo that gifting. Originally, we were hoping for home care, so we were moving money around to get qualification. Mm-hmm. And based on your rule of halves that you're talking about, if there's $60,000, $70,000, we could save half of it.
Right.
And instead of going through private paying, you know, 4, maybe 5 months of a nursing home, the nuts and bolts, you basically private pay 2 months. And that's how we are able to only spend half the money. Okay. Well, the nursing home filed a Medicaid application for loved one. Okay. Probably the family said, sure, whatever, but they don't recall it very well. But we all knew there would have been a penalty. I mean, Ben, you would have said there's a penalty.
I would have said
you
just there's gave a penalty. Away money. Absolutely.
A month ago, you gave away money.
That's right. So you're going to have to account for that.
$50,000 of assets. They filed a Medicaid application for someone who had more than the resource allowance.
Well, they had the resource allowance, but there was that clear past gifting, like literally a couple months ago.
The past gifting created the penalty, yeah.
So they got a Medicaid letter saying that you have about a $59,000 amount of uncompensated transfers, and this is what your penalty equals.
About 5 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the clients are really livid. Now, we said to the client, look, you were going to have some penalty of some amount anyway, even if we did our thing. And the application's already been in. Now it's between you and this nursing facility. And mm-hmm. If they did things without notifying you appropriately, maybe you can negotiate with them to say, hey, look, we were about to hire this law firm that was going to save us half our money. We're not going to pay you $59,000 over the next couple months. We'll pay you $35,000 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But what's the headline for our purposes is, if your loved one is in rehab, if they're in the hospital, first of all, and you're a client, call us, let us know. Because there's also, look, they may not know about the 3 midnight rule, right, Harry?
Well,
they may
not know about it. You know, if, for instance, if you're not admitted, okay, when people go to the hospital, most people, older people particularly, go to the hospital. Guess how they get to the hospital? Through the emergency room. Their doctor doesn't say, oh, go check into the hospital, I'm admitting you today. Rare that happens. What happens, 9 times out of 10, somebody falls, okay? They fall, they have an injury, they take them to the emergency room. If you've ever been in the emergency room, you know, you're going to lay there 5-6 hours probably before somebody even comes, you know, they'll take care of you. Not that they don't. But you will be there indefinitely. At that point, you are in the hospital, but you have not been admitted to the hospital as a patient. You may lay there for 12 hours, and maybe they'll fix you up, do whatever you want, and send you home. And maybe they'll say, wait, we have to, you broke your hip. We have to do surgery. So you're going upstairs to a room, you know, and then tomorrow, whatever, surgery. Well, at that point, your doctor, somebody is supposed to admit you. Well, your regular doctor probably doesn't even know you're in the hospital at that point, somebody. So you have to be admitted. And guess what? While you're laying there in the emergency room, you're in what's called observation status. You are being observed, but you are not admitted. And if for some reason they never convert you from observation status to admitted, and then you go to rehab, guess what? Observation status patients, rehabilitation is not paid for by Medicare.
Right.
You know why? Because once you're admitted, your Medicare Part A kicks in, and that includes the rehabilitation for the first 20 days and up to maybe 100 days. If you're in observation status, you're covered under Medicare Part B, which does not cover rehabilitation expenses. So you've got your relative in the hospital. For heaven's sakes, make sure you check at the nurse's station and find out whether your grandmother has been admitted or she's on observation status, because if she is, they're not going to pick up a nickel of her rehab.
You could be at the hospital for 4 days, but you weren't admitted for three.
This actually happened.
I know it happened to you.
To my mother-in-law about five, 6 years ago. She fell. She went to the hospital. She had surgery. She was there for 3 days, and she was being discharged for rehab and immediately found out she was still on observation status. Guess what? Her doctor had screwed up. They never converted her from observation to admitted. So I said, whoa, do not let her leave the
building. You said, do you know who I am?
Elvis?
I'm Harry Miller.
Elvis has not left the building. Do not let Marge leave the building, okay? Because once she's out of there, and we got it fixed, we got it corrected. But had she left the building, that's it, boom.
And you knew because you knew. I mean, who else knows this stuff? No one knows this stuff.
No one knows this stuff. And I think the second important point you're making there, David, is for heaven's sakes, when you're in these situations with Medicare, Medicaid, hospital discharge, for heaven's sakes, use someone who has a wealth of experience in these areas.
Sure.
Do not listen to the people in the business office at the nursing. Their job is not to counsel you. Their job is not to save the family money. Their job is to do, basically their job is to run a nursing home.
To get you out
the door. I don't know what they're in the Medicaid application business anyway for. And they do have connections with companies that do these things. The companies they use that do these things are rarely, if ever, attorneys.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what recourse you have. You've got the same problem here. You have somebody who did a Medicaid application who's not an attorney. You know, you have no recourse, probably. I don't know. Maybe you do, maybe you don't.
Because the family thought that Medicare was still covering, we had not done this loan and gift.
Right.
Right. And because we had not done the loan and gift, factually, this loved one does not qualify on February 1st, March 1st, April 1st, May 1st, June 1st. Right now, they don't qualify because we haven't moved money around. And so even if that application was somehow magically withdrawn, doesn't help because the last 5-6 months...
Yeah,
we're
once,
in trouble.
Once it's approved, the penalty is dead. No, it's
So it's just an awful fact pattern because now they're, you know, for Medicaid standpoint, they assigned a penalty and we'll go from there. Actually, you know, there's this little loophole with the 5-year penalty that we almost had a fact pattern about a month ago that applied. So we all know there's a 5-year look back period and they'll add up all your transfers during those 5 years. That's the point of the look back, and they give you a penalty based on a denominator, and we don't get into it. Okay. So they calculate a penalty. The penalty starts to run not when you apply necessarily. It's supposed to run when you are financially eligible, if not for the transfers, and you're physically in the nursing facility.
Physically be in
You've been admitted.
Otherwise eligible, which means you're
$16,000 or less.
$16,000 or less.
Yeah. And so the penalty will start to tick. If you magically get better and are able to go home, the penalty continues to run even though you are not private paying a nursing home. You're not there anymore. You need to be in for it to start. You don't have to be a resident
in the nursing home for the entire penalty period.
So we almost had a fact pattern where Dad would have left and gone home.
With home care.
And no penalty.
As to which there's no penalty.
Yeah, no penalty. So, but that whole time, he'd be going through the long penalty he was going to have for the 5-year look back. So it didn't work out because you're in a nursing home for a reason, right? Usually we're not getting a lot better, although it's possible.
It would be someone who can no longer be cared for at home.
Who the heck would know that little wrinkle rule? We didn't know about it until a couple years ago. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You never know.
No, as long as you're in there on day one,
Okay. I mean, you could theoretically. play some games if you wanted to.
Well, they're planning options. These are not games. I mean, these are legitimate planning options that are provided for in the regulations, and occasionally we can use things like that. We can use things if we have an unlimited amount of assets can be transferred to a disabled child. Okay, we always ask the family if any of the children is receiving any type of disability. Veterans disability, Social Security disability, those sorts of things. And on occasion, we can transfer assets to a child who has a disability, but it does not affect that person because they're receiving a type of disability payment that isn't tied to SSI or Medicaid. It's not a resource-tested or an income-tested disability. So, you know, they're rare instances, but occasionally...
there's some luck available. Sometimes. Hmm. It's getting lucky. And the reason why it's getting lucky is because, wait a minute, right? My spouse is 10 years younger than me. So if I have some needs, well, she'll still be here. Well, I don't know that. You don't know that. Who knows?
You know.
Disabled child exemption. Well, now we have an asset, even the child caretaker exemption. So we're moving money to a person. Well, what if mom's plan was to leave things evenly to all the kids, all four kids? Now one kid's getting a really big asset. Is that kid going to play nice later and split that asset up four ways? Or are they going to say, wait a minute, I've been in this house for the last 3 years. I deserve it. So that's where
in the course of advising the family, we would deal with those issues. Not everybody would. We would deal with setting up the plan so that it did wind up at some point the same way every mom wanted it to do in the first place.
Well, so Harry, we had a fact pattern, and it didn't end up resulting in anything. Unfortunately, mom passed away, so that eliminated the Medicaid issue. Where brother, who's troubled brother, let's say, we could have created immediate eligibility both money-wise and house-wise because he was in the house and he's also disabled, but he also is very upset with his sisters and was not going to co-sign on splitting things equally the way mom wanted. Mm-hmm. And we were going back and forth about it and ended up not being an issue, unfortunately, because mom passed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these exemptions are great, but imagine if mom did a trust 5 years ago.
Well,
then we don't have to rely on these exemptions and the goodwill of other people.
That's what we keep advocating. We do. And the second most common Medicaid planning mistake is the one that says, huh? I'm never going to a nursing home.
Yeah. We hear that one a lot.
I'm never going to a nursing home. Really?
Not by choice. I get it. No one chooses.
These are not choices that people voluntarily make. The difficulty is, I mean, I think we see it. We're certainly not medical people. We're just lawyers. But you know, when people get older, particularly when they have problems walking. You know, you can't walk anymore. It's very hard to be cared for at home because you need 24/7 care, all right, just to do, you know, basic, what they call the activities of daily living. Very few people can afford 24-hour, round-the-clock care through private pay. That's going to run you probably still less than a nursing home, but you're probably still looking at $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 a month for competent care.
And you got to find the people.
And you have to find the people, which is an increasing problem today.
Yeah.
There are fewer and fewer people available. And I don't know that there's fewer people doing it, but there's more people who need the care. You have to realize the baby boomers, us baby boomers, David's not a baby boomer. He's far too young.
Oh, wow, yeah.
What are you, Jen?
No way.
What Jen are you? X, Y, Z?
I was born in 1980.
Okay.
So I'm not a millennial. How dare anyone? January keeps calling me one. No, I'm Gen
X.
X.
Yeah. Gen X.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. As opposed to
Gen Y, which would be like 18-year-olds or something.
Gen probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or J-Lo or A-Rod.
when the Kingston office was opened,
I was
about to start college. I was starting college when Kingston office was open. I'm plenty old. I look older.
Wow. Ouch.
No, I mean...
Ouch. I was starting college.
And I'm an old soul.
When the Kingston office was open.
When was that? 70...
What's that?
When was the Kingston office opened?
1998. Yeah, David.
Oh, jeez.
David had just turned 18.
Oh, why? You said you were born in 80, right? I graduated high school in 80.
You graduated high school in
80. In 80, yeah.
Okay. Where'd you go? St. John's? Fordham? Where'd you go?
For a college?
Yeah.
I went to Hofstra University.
Oh, Hofstra.
Yeah, home of the presidential debates.
The Pride,
all
right?
Very proud.
The Pride?
The Pride.
Yeah.
We used to be the Dutchman.
Was there, some the kind pride. Of a, was there a problem with the Dutch that they made you change the mascot?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Pride is a group of lions.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
It is. That's what we are.
The Lion King, yes.
Yes. You could be our next caller, please.
You could be a caller, please. You could be a caller, please.
Where's Garth when you need him?
I know. What's going on?
476-5900.
Larry from Atlanta, call in.
Oh, my.
Larry, hello. Oh, my goodness.
What happened to Larry from Atlanta?
Well, we're kind of getting up towards, well, we got 2 minutes. Okay. So let me give you another story here. This is a tough one. I had a phone call with a client, and we've been going back and forth. This is a long-standing issue, right? So, grandma and grandpa, and both of them are not doing so hot. Both of them have dementia, but grandpa possibly has Lewy body dementia.
Okay, that's, yeah. Mm-hmm.
A little more aggressive. He's a little more aggressive. Some days he's saying, I need a nursing home. I agree. Some days I'm fine.
Right.
He doesn't like his family helping him, but he's totally fine when caregivers are trying to help him.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's usually the other way around.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's usually the other way around.
And granddaughter and mom, they're our point people, and they are beside themselves because they promised their parents, grandparents, you will never go to the nursing home. Mm. I'm never going to put you there. But they're having a heck of a time at home. Heck of a time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not currently getting community Medicaid. And what I talked to her about, the granddaughter, was, listen, there's this program. It may provide lots of help. One of the cons for other people is they don't want strangers in their house. This guy is fine with it, right? That may work. He's got dementia. Grandma's got dementia. That's, if Kim was here, she'd say that's 24/7 between the two of them. Round-the-clock care.
Right.
We could try to get a live-in to try to help with that. Right, Kim could use her resources to try to fill in all the gaps. Great. Where do I sign up? Well, it might not be until October or November.
Mm-hmm.
And things are only going to go in one direction. And so she is trying to figure out what the heck am I going to do? And I said to her, look, I feel like you got to just get this out of your system and really know that you tried everything. I mean, people do need nursing homes. They exist for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
No one wants to go in, but you kind of have to at some point. Try for home. Get it out of your system. Hopefully it works. If it doesn't work, you tried literally everything there possibly is that we could do. And then we'll, if we need to. And spouse is still alive, and we're going to do some pretty aggressive moving of assets because we're going to, obviously, home care, no look-back period. Nursing home, 5-year look-back period, but we have a spouse. So we might be juggling assets between grandma and grandpa to try to get grandpa qualified for a nursing home if need be. Oh, by the way, they have a great power of attorney. We did the very first thing we did, the way we met was the power of attorney.
Right.
So I know we're going to be able to do everything we got to do. And maybe we'll talk more about powers of attorney on the second half.
We'll take our break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston. Our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back to the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
I'm Dave Kopickin.
And Dave and I are two of the attorneys with the firm. We practice estate planning, asset protection planning, estate administration. We have a huge amount of estates that we handle on an ongoing basis.
Too many.
We have,
too many.
Yeah, well, you know, people are,
it's not like, I know people are going to pass away, but, you know, let's get our stuff in order, guys. Let's avoid probate, please. We don't like doing that work.
I think one of the things I see a lot, we were just talking a little bit about powers of attorney before we went into the break, but recently I am seeing a lot of really old, out-of-date powers of attorney. All right?
The one-page front and back.
The one-pager, the 3-4-pager from back in the 80s, the 90s, the early 2000s until like in 2008 or 9, then they switched the statute and they went to this gargantuan thing. It's a little better now, but the problem is a lot of those old powers of attorney don't have adequate gifting and transfer provisions built into them, and so you can't do the transfers with the kind of planning we've been talking about the last half hour without adding significant transfer provisions into them. I've had a whole bunch of clients in the last 2 months who literally haven't been in to see us for like 15 years, maybe 20 years, okay? Now, I know we routinely send out letters to our clients, like every 5 years, say, hey, it's been 5 years since we blah, 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 blah. Maybe you ought to, you know, at least call us up and go over things. Many of them do.
It's free, by the way.
Many of them do, and many of them don't. And they come in, and I'm seeing this old power of attorney. If the principal no longer has the capacity, we have a problem then doing adequate Medicaid planning.
So. Well, it's a two-parter because for a lot of people, their old power of attorney doesn't have gifting language to begin with. And that they have this standard thing that says they could gift 10 or 11 grand a year. Why? Because back then that was the exemption.
In 1985, that was the annual exclusion amount, which back then I was 15 or 16, I think. Yeah.
Now, if Harry Miller did your power of attorney 20 years ago, and you're now
when we opened the Kingston office.
You were his first Kingston client, and he did a power of attorney for you. I'm going to guess that if they were 60-plus years old, that power of attorney does have the appropriate gifting.
It does. However, there is the change in the statute. Here's the problem, you know. The people at the bank now, the branch manager at the bank...
is younger than our Kingston office.
it was like David, you know, in 1998.
All right.
He was going to college. And he doesn't know nothing about this 3-page power of attorney. But he says, I don't know, this isn't the kind of power of attorney. And I say, well,
they're used to seeing a 13-page document, and you come in with a 2-page document.
They don't know what to do with
it. I need to send this to our legal department Charlotte or something.
So it causes delay.
Yeah.
It causes delay. It causes confusion. And, you know, for heaven's sakes, get a new power of attorney done. I mean, it really is one of the least expensive things you could do at a law firm these days.
We'll get into a different topic, but I do, power of attorney and Medicaid, they joined forces for this little bit here. So have been retained for a Medicaid. There's nothing we could do. Mom needs a nursing home. She's now placed in the nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
Said to the family, does mom have a power of attorney? Yep. We just did it a couple months ago. I said, great. Did you use an attorney? Yeah. I said, great. Because I'm thinking that the appropriate gifting provisions will be in that power of attorney. But they were not. And the attorney that did it, his website says he does this kind of stuff, but he also handles your, you know, traffic stuff and your divorce stuff and your bankruptcy stuff. He kind of does everything.
Jack of all trades.
Yeah. But he doesn't do powers of attorney very well, though, because he didn't, at that point, it was very clear, mom's not doing hot. I don't have any gifting provisions in it. So Mike had to go out to Amsterdam to the nursing facility, crossing our fingers that mom was going to have the right capacity to still sign a power of attorney. It was helpful that we already had one for her to look at to see, I signed this, right. I'm just going to initial here to allow this money moving. But you know, the fact pattern, it revolves around a very nice lakefront property. The most important thing to the kids and the grandkids is his property. It's where grandma and grandpa live. And we need to get that thing out of her name into dad's name to do a refusal. And now normally we wouldn't have to do a refusal. The property is just worth that much, Harry. It's right. Well beyond the exemption level for a house.
Which I think is now about $850,000.
Oh, I mean, it's lakefront, Lake George, post-pandemic. Yeah, it's like multi-multi. Yeah.
Pay that for the lot.
If we can't move that, we're in trouble. Right? It counts against mom. It's too high. It's too much money. So that power of attorney, literally, thankfully, she was able to sign it, and we had witnesses and the whole thing. But, geez, guys, I mean, the power of attorney is no joke. If you don't have a good one, it's either a guardianship proceeding or we can't do all the stuff we know how to do. And a lot of times we lose a month or two or three, which in the nursing home just cost you $40,000.
Yes. It's really a shame because that is such a critical. That and the health care proxy, of course, which has nothing to do with Medicaid planning, but just kind of end-of-life decisions and things. But they are so critical in this kind of planning. And you have to do them while you're awake and alert, and you can still sign your name and initial the box. So,
Well, let's switch gears and talk about something we don't normally talk about. It's so much asset protection. It's so much Medicaid and long-term care and stuff like that.
That's all we do. We do lots of other types of estate planning.
And a type that we don't do very frequently, just it used to be a bigger thing, it used to be a huge thing in Florida, right, is a revocable trust.
Revocable. Yes.
Revocable.
You say revocable, and I say revocable.
Potato, potato, right?
Let's call the whole thing off.
Yeah. So a revocable trust accomplishes a couple things. It leaves money to the right people the way you want to leave money to them. It's a good old-fashioned estate plan, but it also avoids probate.
It does.
And where we see it a lot, or at least I've seen it a lot, Harry, is where it's a second relationship. You got kids, she's got kids, and we want to make sure that you're still in the house. Mm-hmm. But it's her house from the previous relationship, and she wants it to go to her kids. And there's some moving parts, because if you just did a basic, you know, quote-unquote, I love you, Will, I give everything to my spouse, well, if she died, you could do whatever you want with that money, with that asset.
That's
yours.
Correct.
So people want to lock in the result. And maybe they're not worried about long-term care just yet. So revocable works.
It's a wonderful device. It's also, the other thing about revocable trusts is they're private.
Yeah.
They are private because they avoid probate. When you pass away, your trust doesn't have to be filed in the surrogate's court. Okay? Your will has to be filed in the surrogate's court where, frankly, anyone can go down there and look at, see who's getting your money. It becomes essentially a public document.
And not just who's getting your money, Harry. Who's not getting your
money?
Who's
not getting
your money? In your business.
Exactly. I must say I was always fascinated when Mary Lou Whitney passed away and had a will. It was just astonishing to me that her assets had not somehow wound up in a private trust somewhere, but it didn't, and it was a public probate proceeding. It was a little unusual. Normally, people of that level of wealth would have, you know,
a trust.
They all have trusts. And frankly, everyone who owns real estate in more than one state,
just going to say this, it's read my mind,
has to have a revocable trust, because guess what. If you don't, at some point, it's joint names. Yeah, okay, fine. So the husband dies. We've got a house here. We've got a house in Florida, wherever it happens to be. Great. Joint ownership transfers it to the wife. No deed, no nothing. Now, when the wife dies, however, unless she's done something, we have to probate her will in New York, and then we have to go down to Florida and probate the will in Florida. It's called ancillary probate. And so now you've got two probate proceedings.
You got a place in Vermont, you got three.
God forbid you have a couple of timeshares, you know, sure, in Vermont or one out in Las Vegas. Timeshares are deeded. And even though some of them have value. If you have a timeshare at Disney, that still has value. A lot of these things people are just trying to, you know, try to get rid of. But you have to probate the will to transfer the timeshare.
Yeah.
So trusts can consolidate, and you don't need a separate trust for each state. You can put all of your Florida, all of your Arizona, all of your North Carolina, New York, in the same trust.
In the New York trust,
absolutely.
You don't
have to have a separate trust.
So,
right? And then you can, as Dave is saying, let's say we've got second marriages. We've got a lot of second marriages these days. And you want to make some provision for your surviving spouse. You want the surviving spouse, when you die, to possibly have the benefit of income from your trust. But you don't want her, or you don't want him, to be able to direct where the principal's going to go when he or she dies. You want to go to your kids or your favorite charity. So the trust can provide this mechanism of continuing wealth distribution and cash flow to a surviving second spouse or a third spouse, and yet at the same time preserve principal for the ultimate beneficiaries, which are going to be the children of each respective spouse.
Absolutely. And it's important to know that if you just had a will, maybe the right people are still getting your money, but we're also giving the wrong people an opportunity to contest the proceeding, because that's what probate's all about. We literally notify people who have standing, financial standing, about the fact that, hey, you're getting less than what you were otherwise going to get, and you have the ability of contesting this will. Will they win? Well, if you used an attorney and everything was done right, probably not, but that's not the point. It's the delay, it's the time, it's the cost, it's the Herzog law firms of the world.
Will contests are rarely successful, and they are always costly.
Always expensive.
Always fairly expensive. I always say the only people who win in a will contest are the lawyers.
Yeah, well, so, okay, fine. So why are we saying that if we're the ones that win? Because we don't want to do that work. It's so much easier to do a trust. Skip it all.
It is.
There's another instance where revocable trusts come in, and you know, the last 2 months of the stock market probably doesn't help what I'm about to say. But when we have an estate tax issue, revocable trusts can be huge for us, because if you have an estate tax issue, guys, you don't have a long-term care issue, not financially, right? If we have $6 million, if we have $13 million, we are going to private pay for our needs.
Folks like that never go to nursing.
Yeah. So you're going to bring all the help in the world to home. But what you are going to have is a potential estate tax issue. A lot of people, Harry, think that there's a death tax, an inheritance tax. There are none. There is an estate tax, and you have to be unbelievably wealthy for it to apply to you. But with properties, and with lake properties, and with life insurance, and with inheritances, and with retirements, you might get there, and businesses. And if you do, or a lawsuit, because you weren't supposed to die at your age, right, and someone screwed up somewhere, mm-hmm. and we're suing them, we might have a taxable estate. We have a couple clients where, you know, they did great with the market. They did great in their private lives, their businesses. And we use revocable trusts, two of them, one for wife, one for husband. And we're able to ping pong the money between the two of them to take advantage of the tax laws. Now, radio is probably not the right medium to get into it, but there's a lot of times where revocable trusts make the most amount of sense. And if nothing else, it just avoids probate, and it's kind of a wash, because usually the cost of a revocable trust is pretty close to the cost of your normal probate without the delay.
Oh, it's even less. The cost of a revocable trust is far less than the cost of probate proceeding. Mm. It is. But, you know, just like in a nutshell, the federal state tax level right now is about $12.1 million. Per person. That's so if a married couple can today pass $24 million tax-free to their children before they would incur. New York State estate tax level is about $6.1 million, adjusted annually for inflation. Okay, so you could have no federal estate tax problem, but you might have a New York State estate tax problem. And guess what? In about 2 years, on January 1st, 2025, the $12.1 million federal estate tax expires unless Congress passes a new tax law between now and then.
Don't worry, Harry. They'll get their act together.
Oh,
it'll be fine.
I'm sorry. So here's what happens. On January 1st, 2025, the $12.1 million goes away, and we drop back to what it was in 2010, adjusted for inflation, which is about the $6.1 million level that New York State has now. So people who have a $10 million estate right now, or an $8 million, they don't have an estate tax for the next 2 years, but they may have a serious estate tax problem come 2025. I wouldn't bet money that Congress, they can't agree what day of the week it is, let alone pass a major tax bill. Now, we'll see what happens. Anything, well, you know.
So for all those people driving to the paddock right now to check on their horse, the estate tax exemption is
right.
Thinking of you.
Well, there you go.
Ooh.
Apparently no one won the Powerball last night.
Oh, really?
No, it's over $700 million, I think.
I stopped by a bottle of water when I come to the studio. It was up there. It was like $790 million next time.
Wow. It hasn't been hit since April, that's why.
If I'm not here next week,
I know you hit the.
Just assume I.
Yeah,
hit
that's
it.
Fine. I figure you hit it. So
yeah.
That's good.
Maybe I'll buy the station.
All right, I'm in on that. Sure, as long as you keep us
all
hired.
All sports radio all the time.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. I can talk sports. Don't you worry about it.
Oh my God,
multi-talented. Don't you know who I am?
I do know who you
okay.
are. Okay. I also know who Harry is. He's Harry Miller.
He is Harry Miller.
Harry Miller. I usually, when we're talking about trusts and wills, so revocable or having a will, I always talk about David Bowie and Prince. Because they died a couple months apart, right?
They did. And
everyone knows everything about Prince's estate. And so he died even if he did have a will, it would have been probate. And we have half-siblings and this and that. And what are we going to do with all these records and this vault full of unreleased music and yada, yada, yada. All his business is known. And then I say to people, did you hear about David Bowie's estate? They say, no, what happened? I said, yeah, I have no idea. It's trusts. It's all private.
That's all it is. Everything passed through a trust. Absolutely. Interestingly enough, Prince's estate has been in limbo. Now, he died, I just saw this recently, in 2016. He's been dead for 6 years.
Wow.
His estate has just settled on a valuation with the IRS on the value of his the intangible
everything.
Value of his brand at about $160 million or something.
Is that all they did? Because the whole dilemma was, well, if you flood the market with new Prince music, it's not worth as much as if you released a record every year for the next 30 years. You know what I mean?
Well, it's called blockage. In the art world, it's called blockage, you see. I used to do a lot of volunteer lawyers for the arts work back in, you know, when I was your age. And when a famous painter dies, you know, Picasso died, you didn't see, you know, all of the hundreds of unsold oil paintings that he made suddenly, you know, being auctioned off at Sotheby's and, you know, Bonhams. So if you bring out too much, it will have a depressive effect. Any kind of collection like that would have a depressive effect on the market. And so lower the value of the product.
That's a $160 million estate back to the 2016 rules.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be a pretty penny there.
Yeah, well, he has his estate is being split among, I think he had four siblings and step-siblings.
Yeah, he had one full sibling, and then the whole Minneapolis-St. Paul region was trying to be a step-sibling of his
half-sibling. Well, and a whole bunch of people came out of the woodwork claiming to be Prince's children. And I think all those claims were probably dismissed. The other one that just got settled recently is Aretha Franklin.
Oh yeah,
who died? Oh, wow! I'm gonna interrupt myself.
Interrupt yourself. It's worthy of it.
Marion Claverick. Hey, Mary.
Good morning. Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you this morning?
I'm good. I have a simple question. What is the big difference between a revocable and an irrevocable trust?
This is my favorite question. Thank you, Mary. All right, so here's the deal, Mary. So a lot of people think irrevocable means a lot of bad things, but it does not. Irrevocable means not revocable, okay? We went to law school and everything, Mary.
Okay.
So and David got an A-plus in trust.
Yeah, so it's basic logic here. So what does revocable mean? And we talked about revocable trust for a moment, right? So revocable means that you, the person who created the trust, here's the key, by yourself, you by yourself can do whatever the heck you want to do. You want to pull money out of that trust? You can. Why? It's revocable. And you can do it by yourself. You don't need anyone's signature other than your own. Okay? That's what revocable means. irrevocable, or at least the kind of irrevocable we talk about every single week, is this Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. That is technically irrevocable. And every time we talk about it, I say always technically irrevocable because it doesn't mean you don't control it. It does not mean you can't change it. It does not mean that you cannot undo it. You could pull things out of your irrevocable trust. What that means, what irrevocable means in this instance, is that you cannot pull the money out by yourself. It's you plus your trustee and your beneficiaries. That's how New York law works. If all the interested parties to a trust agree, you can pull out whatever you want whenever you feel like it. So it would be you plus other people. It could be one other person. It could be 10 other people. The most important piece of it, though, is that in our Medicaid Asset Protection Trust, you still have two revocable powers, two things you could do by yourself. Number one, you could fire your trustee and replace them with whoever you want. Number two, you could fire your beneficiaries. You could amend your trust to change your beneficiaries. So you have a bunch of puppets when you have a Medicaid trust. And you always control who those puppets are. You could replace them. You could cut them. Do whatever you want to do. You can get your money when you want to. So you can undo an irrevocable trust. I won't say you can revoke it because I'm going to be mixing up lingo. You can undo the irrevocable trust. What? Why do we care? Well, if we apply for Medicaid, like Harry was talking about earlier, Medicaid cares. They want to know what can Mary do by herself. Because if you could do it by yourself, they're going to say, well, then do it, Mary. Take all your money out of the revocable trust and spend it on your needs. But if you have a irrevocable trust where you, Mary, cannot do it by yourself, that's a really big deal because Medicaid says, well, how long you had this trust? And if it's been 5 years, well, the stuff in your trust and whatever it grew to is going to be exempt. It doesn't count against you. So typically when we're talking about Medicaid trusts, you know, people are getting into their 60s and we have an eye towards long-term care, but we also are avoiding probate. We are also leaving money to the right people, and we are still the boss. You are in control. It's just we have help. Just like Harry has been at Herzog Law Firm for decades and decades and decades. And, so Harry was the managing partner forever, right? He was an owner, and you'd say, well, okay, he's in control of the firm. But guess what? Harry could not operate the firm without employees and staff and other attorneys, right? But he could still fire them, right? So he's still in control. He's still the boss. So with irrevocable, you're still in control. With revocable, you are absolutely in control, no doubt about it. But it's all about what does it accomplish down the road, and do we care about long-term care?
Okay. Now, my specific reason is we would like to age in place. We have an irrevocable trust, but we want to put an addition on our home. Now, apparently, and we want to be able to get a mortgage. Hmm. It doesn't work, does it?
Well, the mortgage part is interesting here. So you could always use trust assets if you wanted to do that addition because it's a capital improvement. If you were going to try to come up with money on your own, the local lenders don't like the idea that you are not the trustee of your trust.
Exactly.
So you may need to pull the house out of the trust for purposes of the financing and then put it back in. Whether that's a good idea or not depends on your health, your husband's health, and this whole five-year issue. Do we reset it? Do we not? Your goal is to stay home. Currently, right, there's no look-back period. In the future, there may be a look-back period. So you need to do some thinking there. Is it worth it? Because we need if you need the money to make the addition so we could stay at home, my thought would be, well, your goal is to stay at home and the addition helps you do that. So do whatever you got to do. That's where I would come from. But it's a little more nuanced than that.
So then if we were to take the trust away from this situation, then we have to turn around and go through another 5-year period?
If you pull something out of the trust and then you want to put it back in for that thing that you pulled out, it does reset the 5 years. If there's other money still in the trust, that's fine. Other properties in the trust, that's fine.
There could be some other financing options available. There are, I believe, some banks who, for instance, they may not do a conventional mortgage to an irrevocable trust. They can do it to a revocable trust. But sometimes there are banks who will do a home equity line of credit or home equity loan to a trust. So if you want to talk about that, and there was at least one bank, at least a year or two ago, who was actually doing mortgages to these types of trusts. If you call me next week, I can give you some information about that, okay?
Okay.
Because it might help.
And okay. Probably the financing is a relatively small piece of the equity that you have, so it's a little different than right. Your normal 30-year mortgage.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I so appreciate your help.
Thanks for listening.
Have all right. Take care now.
Bye.
Okay.
That's a big question there, both parts of it. There's a lot that goes into that.
It is. And more people want aging in place. Everybody wants to want to age in place. If you're going to do that, you can't just, you got to plan for it. As this couple apparently
is this house the right house?
Is this the right house? Okay.
I need a bedroom on the first floor, right?
I need a downstairs. Yeah, I need a one-story house. I want no steps. I want this, and if we don't have that kind of a house, we got to look, can we retrofit our existing house
sure.
to do that? Or maybe it makes sense to, consider moving into a smaller space that's all one level, that's outfitted for, door lengths and things. Older houses don't necessarily have door lengths to accommodate wheelchairs and things like that, guardrails, handrails, that kind of stuff.
So I just love the fact that Mary's been proactive not once but twice now, because she was proactive enough to do a trust to
right.
start to protect. And now she's got the options, everybody. She could decide to unprotect.
Right.
She could get some financing.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay cool.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.